We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time, and we're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Yes, sir. Off and rolling Thursday, March 21st, 2024. First day of the round of 64 is upon us. We have some finals. I'll get to it in a second. But welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, in the return, the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 99. Connor, how's it going?
Hello. Happy holidays.
Good. Happy holidays. Happy holidays to you. How about it? But you're doing well.
I'm doing well.
Good to hear. We have to talk. Well. On the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to talk about the NCAA tournament throughout the day. We have some games that have already gone final. First one of the day that went final was Michigan State over Mississippi State. Josh Hubbard didn't show up. And Michigan State, it's March, so you know that they're going to turn it on. They won by 18, 69-51. We also have Duquesne over BYU, probably the biggest upset so far today, 11-6. BYU was favored by 9 points. But I know that there's just that tendency to just not trust BYU in a tournament setting. They ended up losing to Duquesne, 71-67. Creighton beat Akron. Arizona beat Long Beach State. Shout out to Dan Monson, even though we'll talk about it a little bit later in the Blitz. His athletic director, he wants to take credit for what Long Beach State accomplished in getting into the tournament this year. And then North Carolina over Wagner. We have a couple of games in progress. Dayton and Nevada. Dayton's up by one early in the first half. Halftime, Oregon, South Carolina. Oregon up by five. Then Illinois and Morehead State. Morehead State has been giving them a run for their money, but Illinois is up 57-48. And Terrence Shannon is playing very good basketball right now, to say the least, and playing very, very hard. But we'll talk about that in general here in the back half of this hour. I want to start here with the Grizzlies and the traveling G.G. Jackson show. My gosh, man. It's been unbelievable to watch him play. It's been unbelievable to watch this Grizzlies team play with Desmond Bane back in the fold and G.G. Jackson playing alongside of him. Last night, 35-5-3, 7-for-14 from the three-point line. This kid is giving you unreal results. And, like, there just does come a point. I know he hasn't played a whole bunch of games, but there comes a point when you have to put him on an all-rookie team conversation. I think he, if he continues to play this way, will put himself onto that second team. He hadn't played enough games to get onto that first team, and there's a lot of guys still ahead of him on that rookie ladder, if you will. But NBA.com did sort of put out their rookie ladder, and he is tied for 10th. At this particular moment of rookies and the results that they're putting out. And this was a career high. We've seen a couple of career highs for him so far this year. But doing it within the offense, doing it against the best types of teams around the NBA, I mean, the last three times out, to see what he's been able to accomplish in the starting lineup against OKC, who is at the top of the Western Conference, 19 points, against Sacramento, 22 points, on the road against Sacramento, who's moving up the Western Conference standings. And then, of course, that we know about the dynasty of the Golden State Warriors, 35 against that team. And I do want to start here with Chris Paul. Chris Paul, he has his AAU team, and G.G. Jackson was a part of it, and he spoke to it after the game. This is what Chris Paul said about G.G. Jackson Jr.
Honestly, tell you the most fulfilling thing about tonight was G.G. Jackson.
Gigi Jackson was on my AAU team. I was his coach 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Gigi was on my AAU team with a John Adams coach, some great players, Rob Dillingham, Aiden Holloway, a lot of great kids. And Gigi is an unbelievable kid. We done played at Memphis twice this year, and I was hurt both of those games. So going into the game, it was crazy. It's crazy. Sometimes he still call me coach. And he hit a three in my face early in the game. I was pissed because our AAU program is really like a family. And so to see him to be out there on the court playing against him is something I never get used to. It's kind of a surreal moment. So I know I won't hear the end of that damn, what he had, 30 what, 35, God. That was
that's fun, man. That's awesome. And here's the thing that you have to understand about some of these guys that have come along for the Grizzlies this year. We know that, you know, Vince Williams Jr. was a 47th pick. We know that Gigi Jackson was the 45th pick. Listen to other guys around the league talk about these guys. Vince Williams Jr. has gotten the stamp of approval from Luka Doncic as a defender. You're seeing the stamp of approval from Chris Paul for Gigi Jackson. And Gigi Jackson, last six games, these stats are getting quite ridiculous for the youngest player in the NBA, mind you. 25.2 points per game, 4.7 rebounds per game. He's averaging 3.8, about 4 three-pointers made per game. 50% from the field, 39 from 3, 86% from the free throw line. He's not playing like a 19-year-old. He's not playing like the youngest player in the NBA. And I have gotten to the point, and there was always the discussion early when Gigi was getting minutes because of injury. There's always a discussion early for me about if versus when. If he'll turn into what we want him to be or when he turns into what we want him to be. I am fully on board with when, the win category at this point. I think he will be at some point a very, very good player in this league and a very big contributor for this Grizzlies team. But I think we're already at the point where, yeah, some of these games haven't meant a whole lot. We know the Grizzlies are 23-47. But you're seeing what he can be going into next year. And that's a sixth, seventh, eighth guy off the bench, producing at a high level on the offensive end. And it is fun to watch every single night. The Grizzlies have become, because of how bad they have been, it's not the Grizzlies, it's the traveling Gigi Jackson show.
Yeah, it's incredibly exciting to think about what Gigi Jackson could potentially turn into. He's already showing flashes of stardom. He really is. 35 points on the road at Golden State. It doesn't really matter if it was with a, you know, mostly hurt Grizzlies lineup. You were still playing one of the dynasties of the NBA, and they still had most of their guys out there. And Gigi Jackson went out there 11 for 19, 7 of 14, 35 points. He was doing it efficiently. He moved the ball pretty well. He had three assists. It didn't feel like he was shot hunting, if you know what I mean. We've talked about it a few times this year. Gigi has done a really good job of getting his shots within the flow of the offense. He hasn't been pulling or trying to force too many shots. 14 threes are a lot, but when you go back and you watch them, all of them kind of made sense, and especially when you're shooting at the level that he is right now, man, let it fly. Let it fly. There's nothing to hurt right now. So I've been on the Gigi train since pretty much the summer. And I was happy that he got that time in the G League. I still think that he needed some time to bake there. He needed to work on his shot a little bit, get into the professional realm and just see how it works there. And man, it's just the crazy thing is about Gigi is we don't know what his ceiling looks like. And that's what's really exciting about it. We've comped him to Michael Porter Jr. on this show about how the Grizzlies could potentially use him next season. I think today Sean Coleman or somebody out there on Grizz Twitter put out the corner three percentage that he's shooting from. It is truly, truly exciting to see what he is shooting from corner threes this season. It might have been Parker Fleming that put it out there. Highly recommend going to check that out. But he's a weapon for this Grizzlies team, and I don't think that there's any doubt or should be doubt that he is going to be a part of this rotation next year, and he's going to be a key in that rotation next year. If you have Gigi Jackson coming off the bench as your seventh or eighth guy, that could be absolutely lethal. And then I know a lot of people are going to scream about him starting.
I still have the opinion
it doesn't make much sense for him to start. I also don't really think it matters all that much.
Right.
He's going to still probably play 20 to 25 minutes a game. And at the end of the day, if he becomes undeniable, you can close with him. You can have death lineups with Gigi Jackson playing the four. If you go small ball, slide Jaren over to the five. He's going to get his minutes, but man, it is really exciting to think about how he could be deployed for the Memphis Grizzlies next season when they are truly contending and healthy.
No, you
brought up the corner three percentage. That was from Sean Coleman. Shout out to Sean Coleman, good friend of the show. But he is 52% on corner threes.
Woo!
And that is the 99th percentile among all of his peers.
Oh, you love to see it. You love to see it.
And honestly, this is not what we thought he was going to be. We didn't think he'd be this good at shooting the three ball. He, again, 39%.
That was a knock on him
in the last six games. Yeah. He's 37%, though, overall when he's been getting a whole bunch of time this year. It's all good, man. It's all good right now. Obviously, I think these games mean a whole lot less because of where the Grizzlies are at and the Western Conference standings and the fact that they're not really competing for anything. But at the same time, it's good to see him get the live bullets under the lights against the likes of Golden State, against the likes of Oklahoma City, who you're going to have to be contending with and competing with for the next few years, against Sacramento, same thing. You have to get him in front of these teams in live game action for it to mean something. And, you know, I know some people will continue to sort of throw out there that, you know, I think it'll mean a whole lot more when they get into the offseason. He's playing next to Ja, Jaren, and Bane in practice. But those practice reps do not mean the same as live game reps. I don't give a damn who you are. That is just how it works. It's a different speed. It's a different pace. And it's just a different intensity. And to see him do it in live game reps, it shows you that the lights are not going to be too bright for him going into the future. He's 19 years old. He's the youngest player in the NBA at this particular moment. What is going to be annoying, though, Connor, and you already sort of mentioned it, what's going to be annoying is the consistent discussion. And I think it's just sort of a non-discussion. It's just like you're creating issues and conversations that don't need to be had right now. But talking about him starting versus him sitting on the bench to start the game, I just look at his skill set, and I will continue to say this. I don't know how you act as if he needs to be a starter immediately. You have Ja, Jaren, and Bane, who will likely all be present and healthy going into next season. And when you look at G.G. Jackson, as much as he has been relatively efficient, he's gotten a lot of shots up because of all the injuries. And when you put him in a lineup with Ja, Jaren, and Bane to start a game, you're limiting his opportunities. And why would you want to limit his opportunity? He put up 14 threes last night. He's not going to be able to do something like that if he's playing alongside those guys in consistent minutes. Where can he put up those shots? Where can you give him more volume? Off of the damn bench. It's not that complicated. Now, I want to see how it all plays out. I want to see how this all projects going into next year. But at the same time, we're this created annoying conversation about him starting versus him off the bench. Let's let him continue to grow this year. Let's get into the offseason, see how healthy they are heading into next season. Then we can have these discussions and really get down to brass tacks. But right now, it's just a created conversation that we don't really need to be having.
Yeah, it does seem like we're all bored right now in a lost season for the Grizzlies, and the only positive happening right now is pretty much G.G. Jackson out there, other than, of course, you know, Bane being back and Jaren's continued play. I miss Vince. I will say that. I miss Vince Williams Jr. Want to see him out there. But no, I totally agree with you. I don't understand the rush to put G.G. Jackson in a start. He's 19 years old. He's played like 33 NBA games. There is no rush with G.G. Jackson. He can be extremely effective for this team next season off of the bench. You want him to put up shots. That's what he is best at right now. If he was going to be in the starting lineup, you have to find somebody that complements the game of Ja, Bane, and Jaren very, very well. And to do that, it needs to mostly be defense and rebounding. You have two guys that fit that mold pretty perfectly, and they won't be taking shots away from them, and that's in Marcus Smart and Vince Williams Jr. They are ahead of GG in the starter conversation. Unless the only thing that changes it, the only thing that would potentially change it, is if they decide to slide Jaren to the five. I don't think that's the plan right now, so I don't think that that's the discussion to be had. I am totally fine with G.G. Jackson coming off of the bench and being a scoring weapon. What have we heard about with the draft coming up? Everybody's saying, well, you know what the Grizzlies might need? A scoring option off the bench, a flamethrower off the bench. We have one. His name's G.G. Jackson, y'all. If you put G.G. Jackson on that bench, he can be extremely effective for this team. I talked about it on Monday. The last few seasons for the Grizzlies, you know, since they've lost Melton, Kyle Anderson, and that bench unit, and BC went down with his injury, it used to be such a strength of this Grizzlies team to be able to have their bench unit come in, and they would even increase leads. They wouldn't just maintain them, Tyus Jones as well. They would increase these leads. The Grizzlies have the potential to have a very, very good bench next season with what they have right now and what they could potentially add this offseason. G.G. Jackson is a part of that. I don't want to take him away from that bench unit because he is going to help you win games there. I think he will be more effective as a bench scorer than he would be in the starting lineup because he wouldn't be getting those shots.
If you wanted G.G. to fit with this starting lineup at the three, which I don't really know why you'd want. He's 6'9", 245. I think he projects more
as a four.
But like if you wanted him to fit alongside Ja, Jaren, and Bane, you would need him to step up the defensive end, do all the dirty work, and take less shots. Why the hell would you take the shots away from him, though? Why would you take them away from him? There would be no reason, there's no real reason to take volume away from his offensive game. Let him go get his game off with less guys on the floor who are offensively inclined. Ja, Bane, and Jaren are way too offensively inclined to give up shots to G.G. Jackson. Let him come off the bench and go make things happen at this current juncture. We can revisit this as we get into next year to see how he's playing.
Exactly.
But my God, at this moment, if I'm just projecting, I don't know how you project him as some type of starter next to those guys. And also, when you look at Marcus Smart, like, can we really, you really imagine a situation where G.G. Jackson starting over Marcus Smart at the three in the starting lineup? Give me a damn break. That is just, that's a pipe dream for whoever thinks that it is possible. And it just doesn't make sense. It does not make sense with the way the Grizzlies are currently constructed. And I think ultimately, whatever lineup you're running out there, you have Ja, Jaren, and Bane. Fill in the damn blanks. It shouldn't be that complicated. It shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, and again, G.G. Jackson is 19 years old. We do not have to rush along this process for him. The good news for the Grizzlies is that they are in a position to be a true contender next year, and G.G. can be a scoring option off of the bench for them that will probably swing some games. Now, that is not to say that down the road, a year or two from now, or even, who knows, maybe by the back half of next year, he becomes so undeniable, you got to slide him in. But to start the season, you've got to see what Marcus Smart looks like as a starter,
and then
you have to see what Vince Williams Jr. looks like as a starter. I am under the full belief that those two guys are in front of him in line, and they probably should be. G.G. Jackson is a very, very talented scorer right now. He has shown a lot of potential in rebounding. He has shown a lot of potential on the defensive end. But right now, in those two areas of his game, it's still kind of potential. We've got to see him put it together a little bit more there before we throw him into a starting lineup. I don't want to see G.G. Jackson trying to defend Anthony Davis at the beginning of a game. That's not going to work out great, all right? To put him in the best position to be successful and to help him come along and not rush him and throw him into the fire when you don't need to, just let him be the seventh or eighth guy.
Yeah.
He's going to get his shots up. You're going to see him a ton in these games. It's going to be fine. You can stay present with G.G. Jackson. You can enjoy his play and say, oh, my God, 35 points. Who knows what the ceiling of this kid can be. He's going to be a weapon for this Grizzlies team next year off of the bench. And down the road, he could very well end up being one of the best three guys on this team, no doubt about it. He has all-star potential. You see it every single night. Shaq talks about it. Chris Paul talked about it. Name all of the Hall of Famers who have talked about the potential of G.G. Jackson. Just hit pause for a second. We don't have to throw him into the starting lineup. It doesn't mean he's unsuccessful if he's not in the starting lineup. It doesn't mean that the Grizzlies are messing up his development if he's not in the starting lineup. It's perfectly fine for him to come off of the bench. I don't understand why we watch a game last night and then we're like, or nothing. Why is that the two
everybody's
options?
Bored.
It doesn't make any sense.
I think everybody's bored.
I think that's the easiest explanation.
Now, I do want to bounce this off you as well, and I'm going to sort of give my thoughts on it too, but earlier in the week, we talked with Jeff Calkins. And by the way, guest-wise today, Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock, and then John Martin will talk some NCAA tournament with him at about 6 o'clock. But Jeff was talking about, you know, the rotation going into next year, where does G.G. fit? And he says he doesn't want to write it down in blood that G.G.'s going to be counted on going into next year. I am there at this point, though. I think you need to be able to count on G.G. Jackson. If you want to go where you want to go, if you want to be a playoff contender, if you want to be a championship contender, I think that next year will be a year. And obviously, it's way early on the timeline. Like, this is something we didn't expect to happen. I mean, he was on a two-way contract and got converted. But I am there at this point where G.G. Jackson does need to be a part of this lineup, and I think he will be a very good part, very solid part of this lineup going into next year, and I'm ready to just sort of stamp my claim on that.
Yeah.
Just based on what I've seen and the results we're seeing, even against good teams.
I've said it like 10 times already in 20 minutes so far of
correct,
the show.
Correct.
I think that he's going to be the seventh or eighth guy next season. If something crazy happens, it might push him to be the ninth. But whatever he is, he's going to be playing for the Grizzlies next season. I truly believe that he will. The flashes that he is showing, he is becoming undeniable as a scorer with the potential in the NBA. Now, I do want to point this out. A lot of people are really excited about his three-point shooting and things like that, which is extremely exciting. His three-point shot when he came out of the draft, out of South Carolina, and even early in the season, people said, you know, he's got a lot of potential as a scorer. He's just got to work on that shot. Turns out that shot's pretty damn good. You hope to continue to see that progression there. But what really excites me, it's these little moves that he'll do, like in the paint, at the elbow, these turnaround Jays. He's showing the ability to score at all three levels, and that's what makes him so exciting. He's also getting to the free throw line pretty frequently.
Seven times last night. And he's knocking them down.
He's shooting 83% from the free throw line in the month of March. And that is what is really, that's what's going to take him over the top, is that GG Jackson is, right now, he's kind of just a three-point shooting threat for the Grizzlies and how they're going to use him. But he can do so much more. And that's what I'm excited to see. And that's why I keep saying, we don't really know what his ceiling is yet. So I find it an act of futility to try to predict what that's going to be. So why not look at him right now and say, okay, his three-point shooting numbers are great in the corner. He does this well. He does that well. He's a decent defender. He rebounds okay. So let's put him in a position that makes him the most successful. And to me, that's not throwing him in the starting lineup.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
You'd be asking him to do a little bit too much in that starting lineup. Off the bench, though, hey, you're going to be the Michael Porter Jr. of the bench unit. If you feel leather, throw it up. That's going to be your job. Yep. If you feel leather on your hand, it better be going toward the hoop. That's what I want to see from Gigi.
Yep. Now, we did have that game last night. Obviously, not too much to break down. They lost 137 to 116. They couldn't stop anybody on the defensive end. But going into that night, if I told you Santi would have 27, Gigi would have 35, and Jaren Jackson Jr. would have 28, and you'd lose by 21, you would have told me I'm full of it. You would have said it would be a lot closer than that, especially if the Grizzlies put up 116. But, hey, it ended up that way. But last night really was more Draymond antics. We had Draymond getting into it with Santi Aldama. Maybe Santi gave him a little bit of an elbow and a hook once he got that offensive
rebound. Santi don't play around, man.
And then Draymond was standing too close to Taylor Jenkins, so Desmond Bane walked up and tried to back him off of Taylor Jenkins while Taylor Jenkins was trying to make his case to the official. But the situation sort of turned kind of sour in that particular one, because there was pushing and shoving. Gary Payton II got shoved by Vitali Potapenko.
Is he okay?
And Taylor Jenkins ended up falling. He sort of got rolled up on, and he fell on the floor. But what's funny about this whole thing is I think that, you know, we always talk about someone who retaliates. They're just as wrong as the person who initiated the thing. But the Warriors announcers, they consistently shoot this guy bail. And it just shows, like, the lengths to which Golden State and the Warriors have gone to try to make Draymond into some victim. I just want to play the way the Warriors announcers were discussing Draymond and the antics from last night. This is them on the broadcast, what they had to say about the two run-ins that Draymond Green had.
And then he and Draymond Green have a bit of an interchange. Aldama bumps Draymond first, and Draymond says, don't do that.
Aldama looked like he was trying to bait Draymond into something there, honestly.
And so then, as Taylor Jenkins, the head coach of Memphis, comes out, and Desmond Bane
says, hey, Draymond, get away. Draymond says, don't put your hands on me. And then GP2 and Vitaly Potapenko and other Memphis people bump into Taylor Jenkins. He goes down right here.
The scrum just got pushed back into him, basically.
Well, you see Vitaly, who's a large man, kind of bumps into GP2, and then
it's almost like he got rolled up on a little bit. Just, no one pushed him, but then
they have a way of just letting him get away with his antics. And always, in most sports, we talk about the person who retaliates is always wrong still. They're just as wrong as the first person to arrive on the scene and to initiate the thing. But when he retaliates, you hear the Warriors announcers say, well, don't, you know, Draymond says, don't do that to me. And they paint Desmond Bane and they paint Santi Aldama as if they are the disturbers in this situation. Draymond talks a lot of trash. It always comes back, and people will try to talk trash back. But when he gets into these shoving matches, it feels like he gets shot bail consistently by everyone in the Warriors' orbit, and I can't understand it. We've seen way too many examples of this in the past. At some point, when he did his whole therapy thing that Adam Silver sent him to in the middle of this year, it was probably supposed to be, hey, don't retaliate. Don't do these things. Don't get into shoving matches just because someone is talking trash. But he can't help himself, yet he still gets shot bail by everybody in the Warriors' orbit. It just gets annoying after a while. It gets very frustrating. They have allowed this to perpetuate year after year after year, and you just hear sort of how it is discussed by the Warriors announcers. You've heard Steve Kerr come to his defense, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, all these guys come to his defense. At some point, you just have to acknowledge the guy can't help his damn self. If he gets provoked, he will initiate it and he will escalate it to a point of no return, and that's why Taylor Jenkins ends up falling to the ground last night.
The victimhood mindset of the Golden State Warriors, their fans, their announcers, their team coaches, it's so exhausting. It's so exhausting. When you go back and you watch that clip, Santi Aldama was turning around to run back down the other side of the court, and Draymond put his hands on him. What the hell are they talking about with Santi was baiting him? Also, let me ask you a question, Gabe. Is the Warriors bench directly in front of the Grizzlies, or is it on the other side of the court?
Other side of the court.
Then why the hell was Draymond on the Grizzlies side of the bench?
I don't know.
Why
was he standing so close to Taylor Jenkins and sort of talking, whatever
That's
he was
point.
Yapping?
It's,
why is he standing directly?
He put himself in these situations, and they're like, I can't believe that they're that what they did to Draymond Green.
They're
it's like,
baiting
he put
him.
Himself
they're
in the situation.
I don't get it, man. It's so frustrating.
It's
and you
silly.
Know what it turned into as far as the officials were concerned? Wasn't a one-sided, it was a double tech on Desmond Bane and Draymond Green is how that whole thing ended up. Okay.
I also like how they tried to blame Taylor Jenkins falling on any of the Grizzlies when all three people that made contact with them were in Golden State Warriors
they're
jersey.
Honestly,
it's
man.
It's just like, come on, y'all. Come on, y'all.
It is special. It is special. The ability to turn Draymond Green into a victim is a special ability. I can't get over it. And those Warriors announcers, come on, man. Come on. There comes a point with all of these issues he's run into in the past, you just need to stop excusing it. Stop excusing it. Regardless of if he's provoked or not, he may get provoked, sure, but he escalates it to a point of no return if he's provoked at all. There are other players that will let things slide, and we can break these things up where they don't escalate.
If anything,
he allows
man.
It to escalate. He makes it escalate.
If anything, you know, they're talking about, well, he got baited. Well, he's taking the bait then. Like, why aren't y'all talking about that? Just walk away. Like, that's another thing is, like, let's say that, I don't agree with it, but let's say that Santi did provoke Draymond. Why didn't he just walk away? You don't have to retaliate. If the whole meditation, whatever the hell you went through, taught you a lesson, wouldn't you just walk away? They're like, well, he doesn't have to take the bait. If he's being provoked, walk
I know,
away.
That's the whole point I'm making. We always
it's quite ridiculous.
We the person who initiates it and the person who escalates it are in the same boat. They're just at fault, just as at fault for what's going on. But it feels like the people in the Warriors' orbit make it seem as if Draymond, if he takes that bait, oh, he was deserving. He should.
Yeah, it's
that
like
bait.
Oh, he was justified.
It was justified.
It's the justified anger, which is very odd.
When if there was any other situation, if it was the other way around, that would be a completely different discussion. Oh, he took the bait and he escalated. No. If Draymond does it, it's something different for them in their mind. If Santi Aldama was on the other end of that thing and he escalated the situation, Santi Aldama would be public enemy number one for the Warriors. It's frustrating, man. They just let it slide. They let it slide. And they make him a victim, which is really hard to do. It's really hard to do, but they find a way. They find a way. Where there's a will, there is a way. Now, we need to go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the NCAA tournament, first day of the round of 64. We have some finals that we'll get to, and we'll talk about some of these games along the way. That is going to be next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Day one of the round of 64 is rolling along right now. We have one more final. As you know, I mentioned a few off the top, but Illinois has put the finishing touches on Morehead State in the 3-14 game. Obviously, that one is out of the East region, but 85-69, they win. Marcus Domask actually had 12 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. He tallied the first triple-double that we have seen in the NCAA tournament since John Morant in 2019 from Murray State. So there is that. Terrence Shannon Jr. was phenomenal in this game, 9-16 from the field, 26 points, 4 assists. He had 2 steals, a couple of blocks, only 1 turnover, 9-16 from the field, 3-9 from 3. He is he's a guy that can definitely help himself out. And then guy off the bench that I have never really heard of, Dane Dainha, he ended up against Morehead State, 21 points, 8 rebounds, 9-9 from the field in 23 minutes. Pretty good. Pretty good. But also on top of that, some of the winners today, North Carolina over Wagner, Arizona over Long Beach State, ending Dan Monson's career at Long Beach State after 17 years. Creighton beating Akron 77-60. Duquesne got over BYU 71-67. They're an interesting story with Keith Dambrot, who actually coached LeBron James. Coached LeBron James at St. Vincent St. Mary. I think his one of his teammates, too, LeBron James' teammates, Drew Jones, is one of his assistant coaches. So that's going to be a fun story to follow throughout March Madness to see if they can make a run. And then, of course, Michigan State got over top of Mississippi State. I'll get to that in just a second. We do have some live games going on right now. Oregon is beating South Carolina and beating them pretty handily. Second half, 11:51 left. They got to the under 12 timeout. Oregon up 57-43. And then Nevada and Dayton are at halftime. Nevada up 34-25. Nevada or Nevada? That's the real question. Nevada or Nevada?
I say Nevada. Yeah. I'm also from Memphis, so.
Yeah, we need to ask somebody from Nevada or Nevada. Now, there's two teams that you just look at. Oregon, of course, over top of South Carolina, 57-43 right now, and then Michigan State over Mississippi State, 69-51 in the first game of the day. Those are two teams that just in general, just get them into March and see what happens. Dana Altman at Oregon has a lot of tournament success. We know that Tom Izzo has the best record and the most wins as a higher-seeded team in the NCAA tournament. That's in the history of the game at this point. But that win, 69-51 over State, was ridiculous. I remember early in the year, I think you were in with me, of course, and we were talking about their loss to James Madison, right? Michigan State's loss to James Madison. And my sentiment remains the same as any loss I see them take throughout the year. Just tell me where they're going to be placed in the tournament, and then I'll pick them from there in the tournament. Because we know Tom Izzo just turns it on, and that team turns it on when they get into the tournament, even as a 9 seed. Josh Hubbard for Mississippi State did not show up today. He was not very good. 6-18 from the field, 3-11 from 3. But Michigan State was a AP preseason top 5 team, and they played like it today with that 18-point win. If you have Hall, Hogard, and Walker, play good ball. Tyson Walker had 19 points, Hogard 8, but 8 assists, and then Malik Hall had 10 points and 5 rebounds. If they all play at the peak of their abilities, this team can make a deep run. But that's just sort of copy and paste every single year with a Michigan State led team, or Michigan State team led by Tom Izzo. You just know that they are going to be alive when you get into the NCAA tournament, and you can never count them out.
It's just this year, too, though, is another example about how that 8-9 game is so brutal. Because it's like, man, we got a really good win over Mississippi State. Who are we playing? North Carolina? Dang it!
Well,
it's like,
I don't know. North Carolina's probably, I mean,
that's
with the
tough
ACC in the current state is, I mean, that Virginia team we saw lose the other night was third in the ACC
this year. Still of the opinion, like, Michigan State kind of snuck into the tournament anyway.
Right.
But it's a good win over Mississippi State. North Carolina's a different beast, though.
I understand. North Carolina's been really good, but I'm not going to rule out Michigan State beating that North Carolina team. I can't do it.
I would be very surprised.
I can't do it. The 7-loss North Carolina team, I know that they were the best team in the ACC this year, and they've been phenomenal all year. But I'm not going to rule out Michigan State from handling business. I just can't do it. Hubert Davis versus Tom Izzo is, to me, at least a little bit of a coaching mismatch. We'll see what happens going into the second round. But North Carolina has to handle business because that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, no doubt. I thought Mississippi State was going to have more of a chance, though. The way they played in the SEC tournament, I thought that they were going to have more against Michigan State, but 18-point loss, that is brutal. Now, I do want to rewind to the first four. Those 16-seed games were phenomenal this year. I know that people don't really care about Grambling State, Montana State, Wagner, and Howard, but that Wagner and Howard game a couple of days ago, Howard had like three chances at the end of that game. They didn't make them from three to tie that game up and go into overtime. They weren't able to do it, but that was very exciting. Then last night we got to overtime, and Grambling State got their first win in the NCAA tournament ever. Shout out to Grambling State for that. I, for one, enjoy those games a whole lot. I enjoyed them this year a whole lot more than the 10 seed play-in games, just because these are teams that never get to this spot. They never get chances. They never get opportunities, and they play their damn ass off. And both of them came down to the wire for that very reason. Both these teams, or all four of those teams, were fighting for, you know, a little bit of, you know, the history of their school. There's not a lot of history with basketball, with Montana State and Grambling State and Wagner and Howard. To see them in that situation in Dayton, put everything on the line, balls to the walls, that's fun to watch for me. That's fun to watch for me. And the 10-seed games just fell short. Virginia got smacked around. Yeah. And then, Boise State had a chance at points in that second half to really cut in and put Colorado out. But Colorado, I always thought, was going to win that game just the way, based on the way things were going. They won 60-53. Boise State, it's kind of funny, Grambling State got their first NCAA tournament win. Boise State has yet to get an NCAA tournament win in the history of their program. They're 0-10 in NCAA tournament games.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, big. That's surprising.
Well, Boise State doesn't have like some long,
they've been
good history.
Decent though recently. I thought that maybe
they have.
Well, I guess
Leon
Rice.
Leon
beat,
Rice
so,
has done a really good job there, but he's been sort of up and down. He's been good the last few years, and he's been building it out. But in the end of the day, you have to win some type of tournament game. You have to show something.
Yeah.
And they haven't been able to do that. 0-10 is kind of, that is wild though.
That is pretty crazy. My biggest takeaway from the first four is that Indiana State should be allowed to force the committee to watch the Virginia-Colorado State game on replay for 24 hours, Clockwork Orange style.
Oh, my gosh.
Eyes open. No blinking. You have to watch what you did.
And I know I talked about this yesterday with Brad, but I want to discuss it with you.
Justice for Derry.
Tony Bennett at Virginia, I am starting to get a – I'm not going to say it's sour. I still think he's a great coach. But I am very curious how he continues to push that product out every single year. It's going to be really hard to get players in this day and age who want to score, who have a different mindset. They don't want to stay on campus for 3 or 4 years. That's where he made his money. That's where he won a national championship, is by keeping, you know, Kyle Guy and all these guys on campus for years at a time. You can't do that in this day and age. In the last 4 or 5 years since the tournament, yeah, he's made it 4 or 5 years since he won the tournament, but they haven't made it past the round of 64 once. Like, there just comes a point where you do have
really?
To, yeah, you have to ask yourself, like, is his style, that slow down, drag out, defensive, half court style, is that going to work? Is that going to jive with the day and age that we're in? And here's the thing, with how, you know, bought in and dug in he is to the style he plays, I am not in the slightest. Like, he needs to make adjustments, probably.
Sure.
They probably need to get up and down the floor a little bit more and be able to adjust and adapt stylistically game to game. But I don't see Tony Bennett making that adjustment. I don't see that happening. He's played this way for a long time. He won a national championship this way. I think he's a good coach, and he can be adaptable, but I don't think that his style is going to be the thing that he adapts. I think it'll be how he goes and recruits and how he recruits and brings guys into this team, to his system. But I don't see him adapting, and I think there's something to be said about Penny Hardaway as well. Now, Virginia has made the tournament. Penny Hardaway hasn't here at Memphis. But I think they're similar in the fact that they want to play a certain way. They want to play a style. regardless of if they win or lose, they want to win or lose that way. They want to win or lose doing what they want to do.
Sure. I mean, if you want to talk about Penny, I actually think that Penny's is more evolved than his, though, by far. Like, you know, it's just when
they
you watch
run,
Virginia
they get up
games,
and down, they don't play half court offense.
Yeah, I mean,
they don't want
the
to.
Tigers beat the hell out of Virginia this year. Beat the hell out of them. It's Virginia struggles when they go up against athletes. Like, when you run into a team that is full of athletes that can disrupt your defense, you're in trouble because it's not like they're going to catch you on offense.
And also, I have to, like, Virginia fans, I know that they love Tony Bennett and what he's done, but
how long has he been
if
there?
If I'm a long time at this point, you can check that. If I'm a fan of Virginia at this point, Connor, and I see, like, okay, yeah, we get to the tournament, but then we bow out in the round of 64 year after year after year, I don't like that style of basketball anymore.
Dude, he's been there since 2009.
But here's the thing, Connor. If that style of basketball is getting me deep runs into the NCAA tournament, sure. Like, I feel fine about it. I love watching it at that point. But if that style of basketball keeps giving me these sort of middling results at Virginia, I don't know how I feel about it anymore. It's not fun to watch. And now, even when they're winning a national championship, it's not fun to watch. Now that they're getting bounced out in the round of 64, it's even worse to watch. It's nasty.
The most fun I've had watching Virginia play basketball is when they lost to that 16 seed. That's the most fun I had watching
when
the
they lost
days
to UMBC.
Or yeah, the Tigers beating the hell out of them.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got to adjust it.
It's kind of simple, though. Like, if you get Virginia out of their pace, you can beat them.
Yeah. That's what we talked about. When they played the Tigers, we were like, whose pace is going to win? And the Tigers did, and that's when the game went.
Like, and Houston sort of plays a little bit of a boring style, but then they can adjust. Kelvin Sampson will consistently adjust, and he can bring guys in based on the adjustment he makes. The recruits will follow. Not only are they winning at a high level, but they don't always play that boring shutdown defense style all the time. They can get up and down the floor, and they can play some high-powered offense when they decide they want to do it. Virginia, since 2019, has not even shown a slight capability of doing that.
That's really surprising. Hasn't gotten out of the first round since 2019. That's tough.
That's where we're at, though. That's where we're at. Are we concerned? We know St. Peter's handled business against Kentucky a couple years ago in a 2-15 game. Any concerns about Tennessee versus St. Peter's tonight? 8:20?
Probably not.
22-point favorites.
Hey, it's madness.
22-point favorites, buddy.
Is Dalton Kinnett going to go 4-17 again? That's the only way I see the Vols losing.
And this was Shaheen Holloway last time the St. Peter's was able to get over a 2-seed.
That was fun.
It's different.
His reaction was fun.
It's a different St. Peter's team. But I think that at this point, just based on name recognition, you can't look past them. You can't look past
St. Peter's.
After what they did to Kentucky a couple years ago. Now, say goodbye to busted brackets because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tourney. Whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. That's $200 to use on point spreads, money lines. You can even pick who is going to win it all. Just visit FanDuel.com/GabeK. That is my promo code, G-A-B-E-K. That's G-A-B-E-K. And bet on college hoops until they cut down the nets. You must be 21 plus and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire just 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Before we transition and talk with Jeff Calkins here in just a moment, there was a interesting point that was brought up by Danny Hurley, of course, the coach over at UConn, won a national championship, trying to two-peat, trying to go back-to-back this year. He was talking about the transfer portal. And I think, you know, the transfer portal, with how many guys, how many teams, how many programs opted out of the NIT, you see a lot of teams focusing on the transfer portal, focusing on recruiting. But he came up and he was talking to the press and he said it shouldn't be open right now, the transfer portal. The fact on Monday, the best week in college basketball that it's open, it's bizarre. Do you think that, I mean, there is part of this where I agree with him. It does detract, it does deflect away from what's actually happening on the floor, because these teams that may get upset, these teams that may bow out early, the guys that got them there may enter the transfer portal immediately following the game within 24 hours. It does distract at least a tad bit from what's going on the floor at this particular moment. And it does sort of add to these teams in the tournament, as much as you have to focus on the tournament, these coaches, the support staff, the recruiting staff, yeah, you're focusing on these games in the tournament, but you still have to have your eye on what's going on elsewhere, what's going on outside of the games you're playing day to day. So I do kind of agree with Danny Hurley. I don't know if there's going to be a great answer for it going to the future. Maybe you could delay it until after the tournament or after, you know, you get to the second weekend, after the Sweet 16, something like that, when there's less teams involved. But I do kind of agree with his sentiment there. Having the transfer portal open while we have two of the best days in college basketball, that is frustrating.
I 100% agree with him. I mean, just look what it did to the NIT, too. We can have that conversation. You know, the transfer portal opening had a huge effect on the teams that wanted to go into the NIT this season. There is a pretty big gap between the Elite Eight in the Final Four, March 31st to April 6th. Have it open then. The Final Four, you have four teams set.
There's only eight teams involved.
Right.
Like, just, yeah.
Yeah, it needs to be pushed back. It opening before the tournament starts, I don't agree with.
Yes.
I think it's not good for the sport.
And it really has hurt the NIT. As much as, yep, like, people will say, oh, I was not going to take the NIT bid anyway, I bet if recruiting was pushed back at least a tad bit,
100%.
You would play a couple games in the NIT. Why not?
Yep.
Right? It's affected a whole lot of postseason basketball, and now you see it sort of affecting the NCAA tournament and sort of where the eyes are going to be.
I just don't. I don't think we should be talking about recruiting during one of the best events in sports. You're taking away eyeballs, or you're taking away attention from one of the biggest events in sports.
The biggest.
If not the biggest. Super Bowl.
Well, no, I mean, not the biggest game. But for college basketball,
for college sports. Yeah.
For college sports, the NCAA tournament is probably the top.
Just push it back. Push it back a month. Push it back.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement. And Danny Hurley, I think you're making a good point. Shout out, buddy. We'll see how he fares in the NCAA tournament, though, while all that's going on. We need to go ahead and get to hour number two. And in hour number two, you know what we do, and you know how we open it every single day? With Jeff Calkins. So today, no exception. We'll do that next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.